This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
We have been running a poll this morning on the BFM Twitter account, that's at BFM Radio, because in Indonesia, the Gojek CEO has stepped down to join President Jokowi's cabinet. And we've been asking you, what do you think about businessmen joining government? So far, we've had about 90 votes on the poll. It's pretty evenly split, actually. So 37% of the respondents have said that they're against it, 34% said they're all for it, another 29% said, meh, don't really care. So you've still got about an hour and a half left to vote on the poll. Do let us know what you think. Now, we are taking a look at the Indonesian cabinet lineup this morning, because their president, Joko Widodo, he was sworn in for his second five-year term on Sunday. And Jokowi, as he's fondly known, won by a convincing majority during the April elections this year, defeating his rival, former General Prabowo Subianto.
Yeah, Jokowi is set to announce his cabinet lineup sometime this week. That may include key opposition figures and even industrialists that would enable him to push through his economic reforms. Now, some news that has come out is that his opposition leader, Prabowo Subianto, who Jokowi defeated in the last two bitterly fought presidential elections, now he may take on the defense portfolio.
Yeah, it's quite interesting because they've had a couple of very high-profile meetings and meet-and-greet type things. So that's hence the speculation that Prabowo will actually be joining the cabinet. But because, you know, the catalyst for our poll this morning was the fact that the 35-year-old co-founder of Indonesia's biggest startup, Gojek, Nadiem Makarim, he told reporters that he has resigned from Gojek after accepting a post in the cabinet. So for some analysis on what's in store for Indonesia in Jokowi's second term, we turn this morning to Alden Iswanto, an analyst with consultancy KRA Group. Thank you for joining us, Alden. Now, President Jokowi gave a speech after his inauguration on Sunday. What has he indicated are the priorities for his second term?
So we believe that it will be mainly economic focus, pushing Indonesia to become a much more business and investment friendly destination, and subsequently escaping the middle income trap. One of his key messages regarding Indonesia's human capital, he wants to push for more vocational training. He stated that he wants Indonesia to adopt a more German-style education system, now constantly adjusting to the needs of the industry. And this is hoped to cut down unemployment rate, as well as producing work-ready workforce with the required technical skills. And this is crucial if Indonesia wants to benefit the outflux of business from China and attract them to set up their operations here. Another very interesting topic for his second term is actually going to be the new capital, an ambitious project with lots of questions involved. It will involve around USD 33 billion, and the government claims that only around 20% will be financed by the state budget and the rest through private-public partnerships. But the question remains, will it be appetizing enough for the private sector? And if he fails to attract them, would the burden fall to the SOEs again? So this is still very much big questions involved.
So Alden, what do you think Jokowi's major challenges will be in achieving these priorities?
So he has to be able to revise several laws that he thinks has been hindering foreign investments. One of them would be the revision of the labor laws as well as the corporate tax law. We don't think that the revision of the corporate tax law would be much troublesome, but the main problem might lie with the labor laws, because Indonesia has one of the highest pension payments as well as severance payments, and this has been very beneficial for workers, but for businessmen and investors, this is a bit of a costly investment to make. So if, let's say, President Jokowi wants to implement those revisions without consulting the necessary labor unions involved, so this might potentially create another political instability via protests and great distress towards the government.
And so while he was re-elected with a sizable majority in April, since then Jokowi's administration has been the subject of massive protests over controversial law reforms. Now, what has changed for Jokowi?
So all these incidents, and even some of them has resulted in death tolls, this has definitely exhausted President Jokowi's political capital. He has previously enjoyed relatively high popular support until now, which might have made it easier for him to pass some unpopular policies. But the recent protests highlight great public disappointment in the political process. The level of public distrust towards the president is unprecedented throughout his political career. And Jokowi cannot risk further political instability if he wants to regain the confidence of the international markets and investors. But probably the biggest disappointment might come from courting off the opposition. Okay? Currently, his coalition controls around 60% of the parliament, with his party, PDIP, holding the biggest bloc. But it seems that for him, he still needed a larger coalition. And that might include Prabowo's Gerindra. And this has caused major upset. So as if the people were being played during the election. A healthy democracy needs a credible and strong opposition to keep the government in check. And if this continues, then perhaps we might be seeing only one party left in the opposition. And to add to that, President Jokowi barely mentioned anything related to democracy or human rights in his first speech. Two big factors that gathered massive support for him back in 2014. So probably for the protesters, the Jokowi that the people are seeing today is a very different Jokowi compared to 2014.
So the big question is, why has Jokowi reversed from his earlier platform of democracy and human rights?
So we have to remember that when Jokowi was elected, he was elected with a minority government. And it was very difficult for him to try to push for the reforms that he needed. And mostly it involves very business investment revisions in the law. And over the past, over the next few years, then he started to attract more of his other opposition parties to his coalition. And that made him easier to pass through new laws because now he has a majority government. So I think he wants to avoid that. He wants to really push for his reforms, economic reforms. And it is very evident in his speech that he is truly focusing on economic, on development, on infrastructure building, and really neglect the democracy and human rights factor in his speech. So it just shows him that maybe his priority is just trying to push for a very economic-oriented legacy for him, instead of really trying to appease to the voters and to uphold maybe democratic narratives that he wrote on to back in 2014.
Now, Alden, turning to expectations for Jokowi's cabinet lineup, the rumours of opposition leaders and other prominent business figures to be featured is very likely as news starts coming out. What's your take on this?
The main problem with such a big coalition and with potential opposition parties joining in, is how would he accommodate them all? Will he have to sacrifice the technocratic integrity of the cabinet? So that remains to be seen. And people are speculating, and even yesterday we saw several high-profile figures entering the palace, and we would expect there would be many new faces in the cabinet, especially in the economic portfolios, which might be more technocratic, hopefully, and more international trade-oriented to spearhead the palm oil dispute with the EU. But I guess the more exciting name would be Gojek's CEO, Nadiem Makarim, who actually had just resigned. He's young, a proven talent in the startup industry, and very tech-oriented. A combination which fits well with President Jokowi's vision of Indonesia. But the main problem remains when you have several high-profile names and young and relatively inexperienced in politics, how well would they work together in a cabinet that is so filled with political dynamics?
Well, thank you very much, Alden. And that was Alden Iswanto, an analyst with consultancy KRA Group. And as he highlighted, some of President Jokowi's emphasis on democracy in his first term has kind of fallen by the wayside, I guess because he's decided, well, you know, the cynic in me says he doesn't need to get elected for a second, for another term, because he can't be elected for another term. So may as well just stop paying the lip service to democracy, right?
Yeah, sadly. And his focus seems to be leaving a legacy, economic legacy, right? He has said that...
Which is not a bad thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, yes, because if you look at Indonesia, it has a lot of potential, right? A huge population, a lot of natural resources. But in the last few years, it is also plagued with a current account deficit. So you have seen the Indonesian rupiah being very volatile. And every time commodity prices come under pressure, the Indonesian economy suffers. I mean, he wants to boost the size, Jokowi wants to boost the size of the economy from the current 1 trillion to 7 trillion by 2045. And of course, lift the GDP income to $22,000, which is quite a big jump from its current level. So I think it's a bit of an uphill battle for Jokowi.
Yes.
And let's see how the new cabinet pans out then.
Indeed, he does have another 5 years to try and make his changes before his term ends. So we shall see how it goes. Once again, don't forget to vote in the poll we have running, BFM Twitter account, that's at BFM Radio. Right now, though, we are coming into a few messages for you, and then we'll be back to take a look at more local stories. So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.